listening to ESL Talk, a podcast made for English teachers by English teachers.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everyone, welcome to another new episode of ESL Talk. We are approaching fast the end of our season, but it's been a really successful season so far. We keep growing, we keep getting more and more listeners, more and more great feedback, and more applications for guests. So thank you all for your fantastic support this season. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at the topic of ESL coaching for healthcare professionals, and we're going to hear from our guest Shweta Ramkumar. She actually works as a teacher and an educator working and coaching healthcare professionals so that she can enable them to be more effective in their job, help more patients, and actually have better outcomes for those patients as well as those healthcare professionals. Again, we're going to go into quite a few different areas as it's quite an extensive and interesting interview. I really learned a lot from it. And she'll also go into specific skills that she manages, different teaching methods, and the ways that she can help different clients, not just healthcare professionals as well. Some great news for the podcast as well. We were recently selected to be featured in Acast and Amazon Music's podcast amplifier. So, it's really great that we've been recognized by our hosts and our partners. You probably hear the ads every single time you tune in. But Acast have selected us for this feature, which is fantastic. So it's great promotion and a great way to help us grow. So thank you for your support in helping us to achieve that milestone. And hopefully, you know, the only way is up from here. Also, don't forget our sponsors, ESL-curriculum.com, that is Crystal Clear ESL, now offering over 750 ready-to-teach, off-the-shelf, interactive materials and resources for you as an online teacher. Whether you teach business English, whether you teach kids, whether you teach IELTS, writing, speaking, it is all there for you. There's also a games package as well now, and there's also a free membership that you can take advantage of to start out, and then very low membership fees after that. I think it's as low as a few dollars a month, so definitely give that a try if you haven't yet. It will save you a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of planning and prep, and you have great materials to work with as well. On our side, again, if you haven't visited the website yet, do go to the website esl-talk.com. There you can listen to all our previous episodes entirely for free. You can also click the link at the top which says Be a Guest if you'd like to be a guest on an upcoming episode. We're always on the lookout for educators, teachers, and people with an extensive background in English and education, because we do want to be able to feature, you know, your passions, your interests, what really motivates you as a teacher, and also as a learner as well. We do also welcome learners as well. It's always great to get those perspectives, and we've had some amazing guests throughout the episodes. So please do feel free to apply if it's something you'd like to do. And before we get into the interview as well, just don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram if you haven't yet. We're up above almost 4,500 now, which is incredible. And again, if you haven't subscribed yet to our podcast, please do. It really helps us grow and build and keep being able to deliver you content every week. So just hit subscribe on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, whatever it is you listen to, so you'll get updated as soon as a new episode is available. Let's go into today's interview with Shweta, where we're going to be talking healthcare and how she helps coach healthcare professionals. Here we go.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, let's get started. Hello, Shweta. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, Daniel. It is a real privilege and honor, and I look forward to sharing my journey as an English language teacher and what I've now moved into doing, which is in the communication and coaching space.
Yes, this is very exciting, and thank you for your kind words. And this is a great topic. Healthcare and even mental health and things like that, and helping that industry, it is very related to ESL coaching in a lot of ways and ESL teaching. So could we maybe start, first of all, about your journey? Initially you were in ESL teaching and you've kind of, moved and transitioned slightly. So what was that journey like, and kind of what was your story in terms of that journey?
Sure. So I've been an educator, like on and off, unofficially all my life. It only made sense that I got my teacher's qualification and started to first teach science and biology in schools. Then the travel bug hit me and I was like, I really want to now explore. And I have done, standard high school teaching and everything in parts of not just Australia where I live currently, but also in the UK. And then I was like, the best way to see the world and I think experience more cultures in the world is by actually teaching English as a second language. Mm-hmm. So my journey actually started when I was in Thailand. So I got my certification from there, started to teach in Thailand for about 6 to 8 months, spent a bit of time in Vietnam doing the same, and then started to sort of move online. And, I've taught students from like all corners of the world, be it Russia, Central America, Europe, Asian countries. And slowly but surely, I felt that I should specialize into something that really marries the best of both worlds. So obviously, talking about science can be quite dry and boring. And mixing that up with ESL language, the link is not very visible. But I felt that, since I... I have worked in healthcare from time to time before, and also my mom being a physician, I was exposed a lot to the healthcare space from a very young age. And I felt that, so this could be a possible way in which I can specialize. So also because of the different countries that I have lived in, and I have had the experience of being in healthcare settings in those places, And I saw quite a lot of gaps and challenges and issues. And I was like, yeah, this is a good way to actually blend both the worlds together that not only am I good at, but also quite mm-hmm. passionate about, and also whether right. there's a need for it. So that's where it all sort of came into existence.
That's really interesting, actually, to go through that journey. And again, I think all of those different experiences probably helped you identify some of the things that were missing between the two different sectors, and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, how did you first start to reveal, okay, people in the healthcare profession need this, or people in the healthcare profession might benefit from this? Kind of how did you identify and fill that gap?
Yeah. So my experience of working in healthcare revealed a lot of the things to me, in the sense that now we have a much more diverse patient base than what we did about 30, 40 years ago. So pretty much back in the day, everything used to be quite homogenous. So if you say went to some other part of the world, whether it's English speaking or not, more or less the patients and the healthcare professionals will be from the same cultural background. But now that's really not the case. And in particular, where I live in Australia, it's not just who are patients who are non-white, but predominantly most of the healthcare professionals are also from all different backgrounds. And I think that is a good thing, that there is that variety, but also that leads to a lot of communication gaps. And what I have experienced, researched, gone through myself, witnessed, is that when a healthcare professional is not able to really connect with the patient on, you know, a significant level. Now, I am aware that it's a very high stress job for them. They don't have a lot of time to be able to do that. And you don't get a second chance to make a good first impression. They're in a mad rush to get everything done and do the admin work and paperwork and everything like that. So they miss those little subtle nuances. And sometimes I feel like they also just do everything by the book, like just to tick a box. And I don't entirely blame them. It's just they have to do what they have to do. But in the process of doing all that, they're really not able to have the opportunity to engage with the patient. And that is where the patients feel like, oh, this person really doesn't care about me. They don't really want to listen to me. They just seem to be going through the motions. And in many instances and this is something that I do talk about a lot in my work, which is patient autonomy and getting them to getting healthcare professionals to really understand, respect that. People tend to be quite prejudiced and also make a lot of assumptions when patients are trying to advocate for their autonomy. And this is where I felt that this leads to a lot of frustration amongst patients, and they feel misunderstood, not understood, not heard, and not empathized with, more importantly. And that's where they feel like, oh, makes them lose faith, not just in the professionals, but the healthcare system altogether, which ironically is really there for people to be, you know, looked after and cared for. Absolutely. So, and that's where I think the gap really sort of starts. And also people who generally come from these, you know, people who come and, you know, qualify themselves over here, whilst they are able to do the OAT exams and they are able to do extremely well in, you know, and they have good English speaking. The problem is that obviously there's the issue of the accent. You know, that's what it is. But that's less of an issue, I think, than really having an understanding of how the patient wants to be communicated with and how the patient wants to be acknowledged, valued, and appreciated and respected. And they don't really understand that, because all these ESL competency exams, proficiency exams, are quite limited in what they can do. They just help you improve your vocabulary and grammar, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, mm-hmm. but communication is not just that. There's a whole lot of different things to it, and just looking at it from that very broad perspective will just give them better tools and strategies on how they can not only communicate but also connect and build better relationships with their patients. And that way the trust really comes with that. And then and I put myself in the patient's shoes as well, quite often than not. I sort of say to myself, okay, if this is what I would like to experience with this sort of, and also that's why I'm very selective about who I go to for my healthcare. So,
right.
I feel that like people sense. Who really, people who really listen to me, people who really without, they don't sort of assume or judge or anything like that. Or mm-hmm. and also they, I also appreciate people who want it to be patient led. So which is mm-hmm. which again, that's something I really sort of look for, and that also is something that I have coached my clients on. So there's a whole different elements of it, really.
Fantastic. What would you say are some of the, you know, the major communication breakdowns? And you've kind of highlighted some of them in terms of, you know, mm-hmm. perceptions and stereotypes mm-hmm. and even subconscious biases that we might have.
Yes,
but what are 100%. Some of the actual communication breakdowns that are visible that we see that can mm-hmm. affect this relationship, not just between yeah. teacher and student, but like you said, doctor and patient? What are some of those that exist, Shweta?
Yeah. Okay. Well, just to sort of put it out there, it's not my coaching is not just for doctors. That's the first thing that everyone assumes. It's right. for anyone who works with patients. So even right. if it's, say, a nutritionist or a counselor or a therapist or anybody. But anyway, one of the things that very interestingly I put in my video series this week is how we as humans really struggle to say sorry or apologizing. So that's one thing. So people, one of the things that I feel that they don't really want to, there's the lack of accountability and lack of taking responsibility is, it can be the one thing. And it's not just in healthcare professionals, it's just a generational problem. And that can be one area where people, you know, the patient might feel that, oh, you know, they know that they've made a mistake and they're just not acknowledging it. They're not sort of taking responsibility for it. And I've mentioned, you know, why it's important to apologize and how they should be apologizing and in situations where they shouldn't be or they shouldn't have to. And the other thing also is things like big picture things like, you know, body language, like, you know, how like in different cultures, certain hand gestures, facial expressions, how you sort of the posture and things like that is sort of different in different cultures. So what might be acceptable and okay in one culture is completely may completely be tabooed in something else. Mm-hmm. I look into also the concept of etiquette quite broadly. So etiquette, not just in the professional space, like, you know, the professional etiquette all healthcare professionals are meant to have, but also the things like, you know, those little subtle cultural nuances healthcare professionals need to be aware of and also equip themselves with in order to get a better understanding of what different patients that they're going to have. The things I also cover is like how to deliver. One of the things that healthcare professionals unfortunately have to face in their just part and parcel of their job is to deliver bad news. And that's something that they never want to do. And that's when they really have to show a lot of empathy and a lot of compassion. And again, that's something that I felt that not just keeping it factual, but also, you know, showing that, you know, that they really do understand the pain and suffering the patient might be going through. Yes. So that again is a big one that I felt that it should be kind of covered.
How can you teach empathy as a communication skill? Like, because I understand it's so important, and I'm sure we all recognize we need to be empathetic and understanding, but how do we teach that mm-hmm. per se?
It is very much an individual case on case by case basis. Like, you'd hope that someone who works in healthcare is, you would hope that some of them actually have more empathy than the average crowd. But no, it actually is very much a skill that is, you develop and you sort of practice it and get better at it.
Right.
So it really makes, you know, I sort of, with my clients, I sort of put them in different scenarios in which not only do they experience, but also they have been in and they might experience in the future. And I sort of go through with, you know, in this situation, what would you say? What would you do? How would you present yourself? What would you avoid doing as well? And then I sort of give my thoughts and I give them the tools on how to best communicate empathy. So an example a big example right now is like, say if you're a veterinarian and, you know, routinely animals, you know, when they have towards the end of life, they have to be euthanized. In that situation, a veterinarian might, even if they have done this every single time, it's hard because veterinarians have to, or any healthcare professionals have to be fact of the matter, but also be empathetic. So So unless they have been in that situation before, it's about avoiding saying things like, I know how you feel, because you don't know how you feel unless you've been there. I think more than the veterinarians, because veterinarians do tend to have their own pets. Let's talk about sonographers. So sonographers, for example, like someone, a sonographer who's never experienced pregnancy and probably who can be someone like me who doesn't ever want to have kids, but routinely does pregnancy scans. They have to deliver the news of a late-term miscarriage, for example, that they've seen. So obviously in that scenario, it's very inauthentic to say, I know how you feel. Also, I feel sorry for you. So instead of saying that, keeping it quite factual, saying that, you know, we have found something quite unexpected and this has led to this. And you just sort of round it off by saying, I'm very sorry. So it sort of do that in the very end. So that's kind of, there is a system that I go through about, you know, what not to slip in the very beginning and what to say really in a more systematic manner. It does come with practice, but people get there eventually.
That's good to know. Yeah, I think those are some really sensitive issues and there's no easy way to say them. But if you have a strategy or you've practiced some ways of communicating that, then I think that can really help people who have to do these kind of things. Let's move on to talk about active listening, because I think this is a really crucial undervalued skill, especially as you've mentioned in that patient, medical professional dynamic. So what are some strategies and techniques you can recommend for, you know, teachers or even, you know, healthcare professionals to enhance their active listening abilities when working with clients? What would you suggest?
So there is a big difference between just listening because you have to, and also listening quite actively. So active listening is really it really is about engaging with the patient or whoever it is that you're speaking to on a much more close sort of basis. And it's interesting, one of my friends who actually is in the mental health space, and she's a counselor, she made a really, really good post about us active listening. And that's where I decided to sort of repost that and sort of, share my own thoughts on it. So, you know, for example, active listening really means being present with whoever it is that you're talking to, and not really having any, you know, major distractions, and really things like looking in the eye, which obviously ties in well with body language. Also validating and clarifying what the other person is saying. So not just scribbling down notes, because, you know, obviously a lot of people tend to do that when they're in healthcare. So they're just scribbling down notes and not just, again, nodding their head, but also telling the patient or whoever they're talking to back, reiterating to them that, oh, so my understanding is that this is what you have said, or this is what you have implied, and getting that clarification from them, and just asking, you know, is this correct? And there's also a big system of do's and don'ts. I have a big video series that I have done about it. And I talk about in that one as well why active listening is so important, because that's the big complaint that a lot of healthcare professionals really get from their patients, that, you know, I just don't feel like they listen. I just don't feel like they care. And and that, again, it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of and also I think it involves giving the other person space to express themselves without letting our preconceived judgments and misconceptions getting in the way. Because a lot of people, when they're talking, they sort of, or when they're communicating, they listen because they want to just respond, as opposed to really letting the other person express themselves and be vulnerable and seeing all those things. And also holding space for the other person to be vulnerable and authentic. And also demonstrating to others that you understand where they're coming from, providing them reassurance and sharing your own experiences and just make them feel validated and supported. So,
yeah. I think active listening is a really underrated skill in all aspects and all kind of teacher, student, or, you know, those kinds of dynamics, because we need to build trust. We need to be empathetic. We need to, you know, give affirmations, even if it's just a yes, okay. These kinds of things, they make a really big difference for sure. And I think that's a really key thing. I'm glad you addressed this as well, you know, with your clients on your program as well. Let's move on and talk about cross-cultural sensitivity, because again, you know, in places like the UK and Australia and Canada, where I am, very diverse, populations across all different, you know, walks of life. So in your experience, Shweta, how does cross-cultural sensitivity play a role in communication, and what advice do you have? Maybe we can just make it general just for teachers, and then we can kind of move it on to healthcare workers.
Yeah. So really, any kind of profession you are in nowadays, there is a very good chance that you're going to be working with, or even, you know, your client base is not just going to be people who look exactly like you or come from the same background as you. So this is where having a broader understanding of what different cultures are like really helps. And obviously, people like me who work in the ESL space, it is part and parcel of their job, because you work with students from all over the world. But also having that exposure to, in a broader sense of what it is like with different cultures and different, the aspects of different cultures that people tend to work around. So obviously it's impossible to know what it's like in every single culture, because there's so many of them, and I personally don't know it either. So what I really tie this in with in my work is the concept of etiquette. So because it's not just etiquette in the sense of professionally, as a healthcare professional, you have to dress up like this, you have to say this, you have to be professional, quote unquote, because that, again, the definition of that has completely changed. So it is all about being aware of, those subtle cues that you may miss when you are interacting with somebody who's from a different race or a different culture. And, you might say something and the other person may lose face as a result of that. And that might be a source of embarrassment for them. So that may lead to a little bit of a sticky situation and an awkward moment for both parties. So having more of a baseline understanding of the fact that, yes, there are different cultures, and there are what can work in or how people from one culture communicate and relate to others is very different so from any others. So it really comes down to practicing again those skills of, okay, how should I say something that that's universally culturally sensitive, that at the same time it's honest and authentic and straightforward, but at the same time it's not likely to offend or upset anyone or make someone feel embarrassed or ashamed or anything like that, just because of them coming from one culture. So obviously you have culture is such a broad thing, so you know to really integrate with the culture, you can do things like celebrate their festivals and get involved in the art and the music scene or whatever, but communication in the cultural space is like a completely different realm altogether. So, and that again comes with not just more exposure, but also being very observant and coming up with, more skills on, what to say and what not to say. And now a lot of organizations offer cross-cultural training and all of those things anyway. So, it is very sort of broad, but yeah, having that understanding really helps you connect better, and practicing the skills that you learn in that space really helps you connect better with patients and anyone else that you are working and communicating with.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. The more conversations you have, the more exposure you have, the more experiences you have, the better prepared you will be for those for those future interactions as well. I'd just like to know a little bit about kind of, your coaching program, what you do. Could you share maybe a success story of someone who you've worked with and kind of the progress they've made or some improvements that they've made?
Yeah. So very early on, I was working quite regularly with this lady from Ukraine. Now, she was not in the healthcare space, but she was working in a service-based role a lot. And I sort of helped her identify the gaps as to where she is, her communication can really improve. So that's really the first thing that you do. So even though your client might come and say to you that, I'm having problems with my English. Okay, that's a given, but let's
very general. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Dig a little deeper and say, okay, and often they don't know it straight away. So this is where I work with them in identifying what the root of the problem is. And I also have with her, I had to really go into her childhood, that really sort of gave her, you know, sort of imprinted in her that I should be saying this or I should not be saying this, or to cut a long story short, in very simple terms, she really struggled with being assertive and she really struggled with standing up for herself and setting boundaries. So she felt like she was being walked all over, not just in her work, but even in her living situation and all that. So what I really had to focus on with her is how to communicate assertively, respectfully, but also not in an aggressive manner, because she was very, very scared of confrontation. So what I said to her was, okay, so let's look at different scenarios where you feel you are being confronted or you feel like you're being threatened. So we looked at them one at a time. We did this on a weekly basis. And I sort of put myself in the other person's shoes, who was sort of like a little role play that we did in every scenario. And, I went through things like, okay, how has this made you feel? The interaction. What do you think you could have said, and what stopped you from doing that? And then sort of practice with me the next scenario. What it is that you had in your mind that you would say if you could, and getting her to reflect on what actually stopped her from saying what she did or doing what she did. And again, so this and also some of the things that she learned in the sessions with me, she applied them when she was at work or when she was with her in her social situation. And I could see that, you know, with time, that it's not just her English that was improving, because that's the other fear that she has. Like, oh, if I say what's on my mind, I'm going to mess the English up. So I said to her, well, it doesn't matter. It's more important that you say what's on your mind, you know. Even if you mess the English up, people, we can understand why it is the way it is.
Right.
But slowly but surely, she made progress. I wouldn't say that she's achieved the pinnacle of success there, but she made real progress in, I think, advocating for herself and standing up for herself and setting those boundaries. And there was quite a lot of progress that I saw in her with the school tools and strategies that she's tried.
I think that's important. It doesn't even have to be the finished article. Just as long as there's progress that you can see and they can see, that's the most important thing, right? And as long as it's tangible and you can measure it, you can go back and say, well, look at where you were a month ago or 2 months ago to where you are now, and you can measure that progress. I think that's really important.
100%, sure.
So Shweta, tell me, what do you feel are the missing pieces in communication and what can be done to address these in the future? I mean, we can look specifically at your role in the ESL field, but maybe more generally, what are the main things that you feel these are missing and we need to address them?
Yeah. So obviously, most of the healthcare professionals, they do speak a decent level of English, and they get really hung up on things like, and I'm sure that you are working, being in the ESL space just like me, you've experienced that they get conscious about things like grammar, pronunciation, vocabulary, this and that, and they completely forget the fact that there's a lot more to it, and that people tend to be, and also they stress about their accent. So, you know, that this all is conditioning that comes from how they were exposed to English, and also how you know, all these competency exams sort of they don't really focus on the broader picture. So that's one thing. So really focusing on that, you know, focusing too much on that rather, and the fact that also because healthcare professionals are in a high pressure, high stress, very demanding role, they are feeling that they're having to put a lot of hats in during the, you know, their consultations or anything like that. So they're sort of like in a mad rush. And I think because, you know, being completely honest, like when I work with my therapist, that's why she really stresses on let's do telehealth instead of, or like, you know, like online conferences like this, because she can then go back and make notes, because in-person sessions, she has to do that, frantically take notes. And again, because now telehealth is becoming so popular, things like, again, how do you speak, you know, the tone of your voice, you know, how fast or slow do you speak? How often do you repeat or clarify information? Right. And when you're also just like us, when we're talking like this virtually, what kind of body language should be there? And just a simple thing like, you know, having a quiet environment to sort of speak from. That's one thing. And also, like when you're, and another big one is, again, people really in an in-person session, people really, healthcare professionals really having empathy, you know, not just just showing that they have empathy, but genuinely having real empathy for their patients. And again, active listening, body language, things like not really being, not really pushing, having their own unconscious biases, like I mentioned before, because that really, really comes into play in a lot of spaces in healthcare, particularly in areas such as female reproductive health is huge, where biases are really, really massive. And that's something that I do talk about quite often. And really having a good understanding of patient autonomy, the fact that you are there to really, as a healthcare professional, facilitate and support them, not sort of impose your perspective or ideas or agenda on somebody. Yes, you share your experiences and you share what's worked best. You can make recommendations, but you do it without any judgment or any preconceived notion. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in that space. And also just not making everything about you. Also, the fact that you're really taking care of a group of people who are some of the most vulnerable members of the society, of the community. So, just putting things, seeing things from their perspective, and again going back to that, you have to not only be empathetic but also be quite fact of the matter. So, not really, you have to have a good professional relationship, but also some people, I think, they tend to get very attached to their patients, especially I think if you're a veterinarian, especially, like, you will feel very attached to your clients who are the animals. And again, I'm sure that people who are in that space, they see sick animals, animals dying all the time. I'm sure it takes a toll on them, but in that situation, really learning to be professional and stable, and really giving the owners or the clients the support that they really need, is what's really missing. And I think a lot of work could be done in that space.
For sure. Tell me then, Shweta, how can our listeners connect with you? How can they find out more about what you do, the programs you offer? Where can we find where you are and learn about your programs and offerings?
Sure. So there's obviously my website, which is healthydynamics.com. Just go and have a look over there. It's actually The Healthy Dynamics. And then I'm most active actually on LinkedIn and YouTube. So I've got a LinkedIn profile, and I do YouTube videos every week where I look at different facets and different aspects of communication in the healthcare space. So like I said, this week's video is about how to effectively apologize. I've done things like also how to effectively interrupt, and things like, now in the next, some of the next upcoming videos, I'll be talking about things like how to be transparent and honest with your patients. So it's just, my videos are about, say, 10 to 12 minutes. So it just covers one aspect of it. And then on the website or even on LinkedIn, you can book in for a discovery call, or there's a freebie opt-in as well, which sort of like a little quiz that people can do to discover what their communication style is and then how they can sort of improve that. So yeah, a lot of different places where you can, but yeah, LinkedIn and YouTube are the best places to find me.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you. What I'll do as well is I will drop all of that information in the description. So if our listeners check under the description, they'll be able to connect with Shweta and find out more about what she does. All right. That was a really enlightening discussion. Thank you for all the detail and depth and actual, how comprehensive you are. I think it's really useful and valuable for our listeners. So thank you for joining us today, Shweta.
And thank you for having me. It's been a real privilege and honor. Thank you.
All right. What a really interesting, informative, and valuable interview with Shweta. Thank you for joining us again to talk about your field and what you do. And again, it's not just one field. It's so many different things and so many different ways that she helps her learners and her clients as well. Do feel free to connect with Shweta. You can follow the links underneath the description of this episode. And as always, don't forget to tune in next week for another brand new episode of ESL Talk, or go to the website esl-talk.com if you'd like to be a guest, and you can also catch up on all our previous episodes for free. That is it for this week. We'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe for even more ESL teaching content.